court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Court appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. I am just a dude.
So for today's episode...
Wait a minute. I got to start off with an apology to our listeners, if there's still any left, after last week's episode.
All right.
I'm afraid I spit my rap tune, and from the feedback, I don't think it was well received. I don't think that's where my future is in rapping. And you know what the saddest part is?
What's that?
I didn't get contacted by Zuckerberg or any of his people about the $23 million, so it didn't. I embarrassed myself for nothing.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you're going to be getting some mail from his lawyers, so that probably just takes a little bit of time.
Well, ironically, that is the only thing they contacted me about. It was a cease and desist order, so that's kind of like the opposite of what I was looking for.
You didn't really get a cease and desist letter, did you?
It seems they think that I slandered Zuckerberg somehow and about how he got Facebook.
Really?
Yeah, but I mean, it's not my fault. I got all my information from that movie, you know, The Social Network.
Yeah.
Where Zuckerberg's played by Michael Cera.
Yeah, I loved him in Arrested Development.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Michael Cera though. I think it's Jesse Eisenberg.
Michael Cera, Jesse Eisenberg. They're the same person, aren't they?
I think they might be brothers.
Why do we have both of them? I mean, there's one part to play, and they both fill that same role, so we need to get rid of one or the other and let the other one do it. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sorry. I can't rap. I already apologized to my daughters before I did it, so I'm not going to do that again. But to the rest of you, I'm sorry for subjecting you to that, and it won't happen again. Now, Zuckerberg, leave me alone. Tell your minions to go away.
Well, I think you're probably going to be starting to get some letters from Michael Cera and Jesse Eisenberg now.
There's only one of them. They just... or trying to get double paychecks or something. They're really the same guy. It's duplicity. We don't need both of them. It's redundant. They're redundant. Jesse, ironically redundant.
Jesse Eisenberg is kind of like sad face Michael Cera.
Neither one of them are a happy face. You ever see either one of them do anything happy?
In Arrested Development, Michael Cera was pretty happy, especially when his cousin walked in the room.
Well, that was before Jesse Eisenberg came along.
His twin.
Took all his good parts.
All right. Well, enough about this. Let's move on to some legal topics, which we were getting ready to discuss. Today's topic is landlord-tenant, and this was suggested to us on our Facebook page by Amy Fort. So this episode is going to deal with the ins and the outs of renting an apartment or a house and all those kinds of things. I'm sure you've rented a lot of apartments and houses over the years, haven't you, Tommy?
It's been a long time since I've had to worry about renting any place. However, I do have a daughter that lives in New York. And I hear some of her horror stories all the time. So I'm sure there's some good information in here that I can pass on to her.
Yeah, a lot of my practice previously was dealing with landlord-tenant. So I have kind of I've seen it from both sides. I've evicted people and I've also defended evictions. So I kind of have a lot of experience with landlord-tenant law.
The yin and the yang.
Yes, the yin and the yang of kicking people out of their home, I guess. I never tried to look at it that way, but
closest I ever came to that, I was a collection manager for a bank when I was back in college. I got to repossess people's cars and stuff.
Oh, that's right. I remember you telling me stories about that.
Oh, yeah. There were some good ones.
Yeah. I think we could probably do a podcast just about repossessing cars. Maybe we'll make a note and write that one down. I'd like to hear some of those stories.
Well, I had a guy steal one back from me one time. I got it from him and he got it back.
Oh. Save the good stuff. We're going to do an episode on that, I think.
All right. Sorry.
So the first thing whenever you're going to rent an apartment or house is always when you're looking at the place, do like a really thorough walkthrough. Check the water pressure. Look for any problems before you sign the lease. As they say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So if you can notice any kind of problems going in there, like the toilet doesn't flush or things like that, that's going to go a long way to making your apartment much more tenable. I don't know. One of those. Anyway, you're going to like it a lot more.
Well, yeah, especially if your toilet flushes.
Yeah.
My apartment would be untenable if the toilet didn't flush because things tend to accumulate.
So
that's a basic necessity, isn't it?
5 minutes in and our first poop joke right on schedule. So after you look at the apartment, the next thing you're going to have to do is you're going to have to sign a lease. And I cannot stress enough about how important it is to make sure you thoroughly read the lease and go through it and make sure that you know everything that is in there. I mean, a lot of times these things are kind of large and not really fun to read, but there's a lot of stuff in there that's going to be really important.
You know, I think I've got a piece of good advice, and this is actually serious. I'm not going anywhere funny with this. Take pictures if there's anything in the apartment when you move in, maybe that isn't perfect. We had one in our young life a long time ago where we rented an apartment and there was a crack in the window in the oven door. And when we mentioned something to the landlord, he said, yeah, it's no big deal. It's fine with the oven. I'm going to get that replaced. Don't worry about it. Well, we lived in that apartment for 3 years. And when we went to leave, that same landlord came in to do the inspection and said, well, you cracked your oven window. It was like that when we moved in. Oh, no, we wouldn't have rented it to you that way. And I had no proof of anything.
Yeah.
I wish I'd have taken that picture. Of course, I don't know. You just look at the picture. What does that prove? I have to get it postmarked or something.
You should take a picture, print it out, then stick it in an envelope and mail it to yourself.
That would have done it. Or I could have just taken it to him and had him sign it and date it. We are aware this is here.
Or in this day and age, once you take a picture of it, stick it in an attachment to an email and send it to him.
Well, this was like in 1979, so I don't think that would have worked.
You tie it to a carrier pigeon or whatever you did back then. I don't know.
Thanks. Yeah, that's what it was. Everything was in black and white, too. There was no color yet.
So when you're, like Tommy said, it's a really good suggestion. If there's anything that you notice when you're first doing your walkthrough, take pictures of it. And like I suggested, put an attachment to an email and send it and say, hey, you promised to fix this oven door on whatever date. So anytime you're dealing with your landlord about things about your apartment, it's always important to get everything in writing, because in my notes where I was going to talk about this, I was going to suggest this later on, but keep everything in writing. Email is a great way to do it. Text messaging, not so much, because it's a little bit of a harder format to print out if you have to go to court. So just an email is the best way. So you always want to have everything in writing, because that way somebody can't go back and say, oh, I don't know what you're talking about, that oven door.
Yeah, they have short memories there when it comes to getting your damage deposit back.
Yeah, especially, yeah. I'm going to talk about damage deposits here in a little bit, too. So the lease itself, you know, the provisions in there that you're going to see are a lot talk about, mainly about the rent. You know, how much rent are you going to pay? When's it going to be due? When's it going to be late? A lot of times it'll talk, well, it always will talk about how long the lease is. Residential leases are usually just 1 year. Kind of a 12-month lease. If you have a commercial lease, they're almost always for longer terms, because whenever you have a commercial lease, you want to build up your business in that spot. And so you don't want to be switching your business year after year after year. So a lot of commercial leases have, you know, 5-year leases, and then with automatic renewal provisions for additional 5 years and things like that. The lease is also going to have who's responsible for different things in the apartment or the house, like who's responsible for the utilities, cutting the grass, can you have pets, things like that. So the other thing the lease is going to have is, and talk about, and Tommy started to touch on this, is your security deposit. Now, the security deposit is a kind of an interesting thing in this day and age, because a lot of times landlords have a lot of responsibilities with what they can do with that deposit money while they're holding it. Usually it has to be held in an interest-free account. A lot of times they have to disclose to you if it isn't. And if it is in an interest-bearing account, then you should be entitled to the interest, because technically it's your money that's accruing that interest. A lot of landlords don't follow this, and it can leave them open for liability. So that's one thing about security deposits. The landlord is upfront with you about where that money is being kept. And almost every state has provisions on this. So another thing that's in the lease is sometimes there might be what's called a force majeure provision. Do you know what that is, Tommy?
Force majeure is something where you can make something happen, but I don't remember exactly. I'm familiar with the term, but I can't remember what it means.
Well, it's kind of close. Force majeure basically means there's some sort of unforeseeable circumstance which prevent someone from fulfilling a contract. So if you're renting a house or something like that, and then a tornado comes through and destroys the house, then obviously the force majeure would prevent the contract from continuing on, at least from continuing on. So that'd be called a force majeure event.
So is that to protect the leasee so that he doesn't have to keep paying rent on a house that got blown away?
Well, it's kind of for both parties. So it's basically
so it's not my fault your house got blown away, so I don't owe you somewhere to live. You got to go find it yourself.
Yeah, pretty much. And also, so you don't have to pay rent as well. So it's kind of a good, one of those double-edged contract provisions. It's kind of good to have in there.
All right. Now, what about, you set up a lease, and what about if extenuating circumstances comes up, like you get transferred with your job, or somebody gets terribly ill and you've got to go because of medical reasons or something like that? Are any of those ever good reasons to get out of a lease that, you know, like maybe you just started in one, you've only been there 2 or 3 months and you've got a year-long lease? Or is it pretty much too bad, you signed it?
Yeah, it's usually pretty much that you are stuck with it. It's like a lease is basically just a contract between you and the landlord that just involves the property. So it's governed by pretty much strict contract provisions. So if there's nothing in there that says that you have the right to a terminate or anything like that, then you'd be kind of up a creek without a paddle, as they say.
So, or you're just at the mercy of his kindness.
Right.
If they might say, well, we understand your situation.
Right.
You know, you got to go home and take care of your mother or something like that.
Yeah. And sometimes, especially with like armed forces, there's different laws that protect armed forces people if they get called away and things like that.
As well, there should be.
Amen. So,
Semper Fi.
So if you have to terminate it, usually, or have some sort of unforeseen circumstance, there might be a provision in your lease, which might help. And it might have like an assignment or a subletting type provision in there, which allows you to assign this contract or this lease to someone else or sublet it out to another tenant. So basically someone would step into your shoes and kind of take over your property and your responsibilities.
Okay. So what about it? Is there ever a provision in there? Like say something comes up, you sign a lease a couple months in and it's a year long lease and you've got to go for whatever reason. So you go out and you find somebody, you happen to know somebody who's renting an apartment, looking for an apartment. So you bring them there. They want the apartment. So you take them to the landlord and say, look, this person's willing to rent the apartment. Can you like say, look, I've made you whole. I brought you somebody that's willing to rent the apartment. So you've got to let me out of my lease now.
Well, it's pretty much always at the discretion of the landlord. Sometimes there'll be an additional clause in there, which says that the only way they can refuse somebody is for good cause shown. So basically, if you bring somebody else to take over your lease and they don't want to rent to that person, they better have a good reason as to why they can't. Like maybe they did a credit check on that person. That person doesn't have good credit or they smell bad or I don't know.
What if the reason is just that, well, I can let the apartment sit there vacant for the next 8 months and avoid the wear and tear and you still got to pay me rent?
Well, I think if there's a for no good cause shown provision in there, I don't think that would fly. They can't do that. So okay. And I think that would be a defense to it.
But the key to that is you probably end up having to go to court to do it. And how much is that going to be worth your while?
Yeah, that's the thing with a lot of this landlord-tenant stuff. I mean, it depends. You're going to have to put up a fight a lot of times to get some things done with it. But a lot of times there are attorney's fees provisions in these leases, which means that the prevailing party will be entitled to get their attorney's fees back should they prevail. So,
well, that'd be good.
Yeah, no landlord wants to get sued and then have to pay the attorney's fees for the tenant that successfully sued them.
Because that's probably more than what you're going to sue for anyway.
It depends, yeah. I mean, you know, depending on how much your rent is.
We know how much you lawyers get paid.
I don't actually get paid. I just, once I became a lawyer, this tree started growing in my backyard, and I just go outside and start picking all this money. It's just, you know, it's magical.
Man, I knew I wouldn't took the wrong major in college.
Yeah, it's great.
It's like spinning the wheel of life, and I got the wrong number.
Have you played Life recently?
No, not recently.
I, for whatever reason, I went out and I wanted to play it. I was feeling nostalgic, and I bought the game of Life, and we put it together. And
I used to love that game.
Oh, it was great. And we played it, but I think they changed like a lot of the rules. Like you can switch professions now, I think, and stuff like that. And then
I don't know. A long time ago, you couldn't. You got it. Whatever you picked, that's what you got, and that's what you got on payday every time you went by it.
Yeah, I know.
And then usually I ended up in the poor farm.
Right.
And I remember as a kid, I thought there really was a poor farm. And I wondered if that's where I'd spend my life, end up in the poor farm, and who else was going to be there with me.
It's your day of reckoning, Tommy Smurl.
And I didn't feel so bad for myself. I mean, if you go through life and you end up in the poor farm, I guess you do stuff. I felt sorry for my family if they were going to have to go there because of me. Sorry, y'all attached yourselves to my anchor and I'm weighing you down.
Like your actual family or your little plastic people family?
Either one. I felt sorry for the plastic people heads there, the sticks with the heads on them. We're all going down together. I like to get a whole car full where you'd fill them both up and you'd lay down a couple kids in the middle row. So, you know, you have like 8 kids going in.
You had two car fulls one time?
No, you would fill up your car and then you could lay some down in the space between the two rows. so you could stack some more kids up in the middle.
Wow, I never had that many kids in life.
Well, I did in the game of life, not in real life.
You must be very virile in the game. You must be very virile in the game of life.
In the game of life, in real life, I got three. They fit in the back seat.
Yeah.
Can we go back to security deposits?
Yes.
I've got a burning question about security deposits.
All right.
Is there a cap on those as far as what they can ask? Like, in other words, is it like a month's rent or whatever? Or can they pretty much name any kind of price they want?
Well, a lot of these things are going to be governed by state law. So each state might have different landlord. Each state is going to have different landlord tenant. Generally speaking, I've never come across anything that says there's going to be a cap for what the security deposit can be. Traditionally, it's 1 month. So I've seen leases where it's been, you have to pay 1 month security deposit. Then you also have to pay first month's rent and last month's rent. So, you know, you're getting hit up for basically 3 months of rent at the very beginning. So those are usually the more draconian type leases. And those I would be a little bit more weary of it to begin with, because why is that landlord taking all that money to begin with? Chances are they're probably not going to take that.
It's not going in an interest-free account.
No.
And sitting there, they're using that money.
Yeah, and especially if they're like, oh, yeah, you can just put it all in one check. That means it's all going into the same account.
Yeah.
So, you know, you always got to be scared of that. And, you know.
But that's the norm. My daughter in New York, every time she's moved into an apartment, which she's been up there 10 years or so, and every time she moves, it's the same thing. 1 month's a damage deposit equal to 1 month's rent, you know, your first month's rent and your last month's rent.
Yeah.
And that's the way it usually goes. And rent up there is high. Or as that one guy that was campaigning for president a few years back would say, he'd walk up down the street and say, the rent is too damn high.
Yeah, I'm sure in New York. And that's basically for like a shoebox, I think, in New York. They're very small apartments.
Yeah.
But I think part of the problem is the market versus, you know, what people are paying. So, I mean, you find a good apartment in New York, if the landlord says that's what it is, then you want that apartment, you're going to go ahead and do that so you can secure that apartment.
But the times that I ran into getting back a security deposit, it seems to me that it is totally at their discretion. It's not like they've got to come in and find busted refrigerators and light fixtures ripped out of the wall. They just look at it and say, oh, well, you don't get your damage deposit back. This place needs, the walls need to be painted and the floors need to be shampooed. Well, you know what? You live somewhere 3 years. Yeah, you're going to want to do that before the next tenant comes in. That would be usual maintenance. Why should you lose your damage deposit for that?
Well, a lot of leases, they'll say in it that normal wear and tear is excluded. So you want to make sure if you have a lease.
But who determines the normal wear and tear?
Well, again, that's if they say, well, we need to paint the walls. Well, I lived here for 3 years. Well, we need to clean the carpets. Well, I lived here for 3 years. That's normal wear and tear. It needs to be cleaned every 3 years or so.
I would agree.
Yeah, then, well, but it's going to be something you're going to have to litigate in court. So, but one interesting thing that I know that Florida does, I've come across, is in dealing with security deposits, is that once you end your lease, the landlord has 30 days to send you a notice as to any claim they're going to make against your security deposit. So if there is, in fact, like a broken oven window glass thing, is that what they're called?
Yeah, that's it. Broken oven window glass thing. That's the technical term.
So if you do have a BO.
Oh, there you go again. UKIP.
So if you do have one of those, then the landlord has to send you a letter saying it's going to cost us $300 to replace this. And we're making a claim against your security deposit for that. If the thing in Florida, though, is if they don't do that within 30 days, then they basically have waived any right to collect on that security deposit at all, and they have to return it to you, the entire thing.
So they got to notify you in writing?
Yeah, in writing. Okay. And that's why I know in Florida, you want to, whenever you leave, you want to make sure that you give them your last, your new mailing address, too. And that is something you definitely want to do in writing as well, to make sure that there's a record, like, hey, here's my mailing address. Here's where you can send the deposit. Yeah, and if they don't actually give you back your security deposit within 30 days, there's actually a cause of action where you could sue them to recover it, and you get your attorney's fees back. So in a case like that, you know, an attorney might even take that on a contingency basis, because they're pretty much going to win, because it's pretty much black and white that they didn't give you the notice. So it's one of those things that landlords that really have a lot of hoops they're going to have to jump through to keep a security deposit, which is why a lot of landlords, I know in Chicago, they've kind of done away with security deposits. They have a new thing they call a move-in fee. So they'll just charge you a move-in fee, and that takes the place of a security deposit.
And you're not going to get that back, are you?
No, you don't get that back. That's not a deposit. It's a move-in fee. It's different.
That was kind of my point, what I was getting at with security deposits, is I always felt like the whole goal of a security deposit from the landlord's end was to keep it.
Yeah.
And they were just trying to find excuses to keep it. And that's not right.
No, it's not.
And now, at least in Chicago, They're just coming right out and saying, yeah, we're trying to screw you. We're going to call it a move-in fee. Thanks. Right. Thank you. You're not going to see it again. And now neither one of us has any expectations at the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, it is what it is. But yeah, so that, I mean, really landlords, while a lot of people see this from kind of like a tenant's point of view, the landlords are being very kind of evil Disney characterish type person.
They all sit around in their underwear counting their cash every day, just throwing it up in the air going,
"Bwah-ha-ha-ha-ha." I'm going to go ahead and apologize to all our landlord listeners out there. I do not feel that way. I see things from both sides, especially whoever pays me to see it from their side. So,
well, you're fair and impartial. I've never been a landlord, so I guess that's why I feel that way. I've been on the other end. I've been on the receiving end, and I'm ready to give it back.
Well, I've represented some landlords who are, a lot of landlords who are genuinely very nice people that try to rent out their a nice place to somebody, and they just have tenants that are horrible. They don't pay the rent. They're always late on it, and they try to evict them, and then they do something to kind of get out of it, and then, you know, they just do this battle for back and forth for months and months and months. So it's not easy being a landlord.
I guess that's true. You don't hear about that as often. Usually the cases you hear about are the tenants that are getting, you know, the raw end of the deal.
Yeah.
But that's true. It does go both ways. I remember there was a movie several years back. Michael Keaton was in it.
Pacific Heights.
And he was just the awfulest individual there was. And he came in and ruined these people's investment in their building and moved in and created all kinds of problems. They couldn't evict him because it was like he'd paid his rent and he let cockroaches loose in there, infested the thing. Anyway, I mean, he was going to cost these people their life savings that they had invested in this thing. And this was he was some kind of grifter, con man that went through life doing these things, assumed identities of people.
I thought he was Batman. I'm Batman.
This was before he was Batman, I think.
I think it was as well. Well, I don't know.
I think this was after he was Mr. Mom.
I tore down Michael Keaton.
He was such a nice guy. I liked Michael Keaton until he did that movie.
Yeah, that movie was evil.
He was terrible.
I remember our property professor in law school actually brought that movie up to discuss different issues with leases and tenants and things like that.
I mean, there was no legal recourse that was good enough. The only thing that was good enough was just drag him out in the street and give him an official butt whooping. That's the only thing that would do it.
Well, that's actually called a self-help eviction.
Drag him out in the street and give him a butt whooping?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about the butt whooping, but the dragging him out in the street part is in basically like changing the locks or moving all their stuff out in the middle of the night when they're not there. That's called a self-help eviction. And that is really, really frowned upon by the courts. So if you are a landlord,
you don't want to do that.
No, you definitely don't want to do that because they will sue you. And a lot of places have treble damages for doing that. And treble damages basically means like triple or punitive damages, things like that.
And you end up doing something like that and he may end up owning your apartment building.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't want to stay away from the self-help evictions. They're not good. So
how about the butt whoopings? Are those good?
Some people need a butt whooping. But okay. I cannot advocate that that's legally good.
There's no legal butt whoopings allowed, huh?
Yeah, not anymore. I think that was done away in the case of butt v. whooping. Now, putting on my other hat, now I'm representing tenants. I have come up with lots of great ways to keep tenants who don't pay their rent in their apartments or their houses, much to the chagrin of landlords.
Oh, okay. So they don't pay it, but they still get to stay in there anyway?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. That's not good.
Well, There's certain procedural things that have to be done a lot of times when you're evicting someone. The facts of eviction cases and landlord-tenant things are pretty much set in stone. Like, there's not going to be much of a dispute. Either you paid the rent or you didn't. The person has a receipt of it or they don't. Whenever you are arguing these cases, the best thing to do is argue civil procedure or court procedure. So especially if you have a landlord who doesn't have a law degree and they're representing themselves trying to evict somebody, and you're an attorney, you can really pull out all the stops and find different procedural things that they did wrong. For example, in Florida, you have to give the tenant a 3-day notice that basically says you have 3 days to pay this back rent. And if they don't pay the back rent within 3 days, and that excludes holidays and weekends, so 3 business days, and if they don't pay within that time period, then the landlord can go ahead and file for the eviction with the court. But they have to do that as a condition precedent before they can file suit. And a lot of times landlords, they'll send a notice for like a certain amount of money, which is the rent. And then some more time will pass and there might be a late fee or something like that added in the lease. And they'll go ahead and tack on that late fee as an extra thing they want. Well, if they didn't ask for that in the 3-day notice, and they didn't, and the lease doesn't specifically say that the late fees are included as extra rent, then that's grounds to go ahead and get that thrown out. It's not valid because they didn't follow what they were supposed to do technically. So there's a lot of different things you can do. Also, you could file whenever you're, especially in Florida, and I used to practice in Florida quite a bit, so that's why I know all these different ins and outs of Florida landlord tenant law.
You just had to practice. You never got it right.
Yeah,
you never made it. You just were practicing.
I never made it to Carnegie Hall. practice. So if the landlord files this 3-day notice, and then basically the tenant, they're going to have to answer once the eviction is filed in court. They're going to have to file an answer saying, "Oh, I don't owe that money," but they also have to file with the court or pay the court the rent that is supposed to be due into the registry of the court. Well, prior to doing that, you can file a motion to have the court determine the amount to be paid into the registry. And that is basically a separate hearing to determine what's owed. So if there's any kind of question about maybe there's some sort of a discrepancy in what rent was paid and things like that, you can file a motion like that. And that just brings everything to a grinding halt.
I saw an episode like that on The Grinder.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah. They were trying to get rid of the guy. And they proved that the landlord had thrown away his check so that they could say that he hadn't paid his rent.
Really?
And he actually tricked him. It wasn't really in there, but it was a grinder, Rob Lowe. He pulled it off.
Yeah.
He wasn't actually a lawyer, but he played one on TV.
I'm sure he played a very good lawyer, too. He just looks like a lawyer.
He does. He seems lawyerly.
He does.
You're like a blonde-haired version of Rob Lowe.
Why, thank you, Tommy. I think. So other thing that landlords can do is if somebody owes them rent, especially if the tenant pays them the rent, like say they go ahead and file an eviction and then the tenant goes ahead and pays them the rent that's owed and the landlord accepts it. Well, basically that's going to nullify the eviction proceeding because they've accepted rent then at that point. So that would end the case because they no longer owed that amount. So,
well, that was the whole purpose of the eviction proceeding, was getting them to pay the rent. So everybody's happy.
It is, but a lot of times at that point,
you're tired of fooling with them.
Yeah, you're tired of fooling with them.
You want to get them out and get somebody that's going to pay first of the month, every month, and you don't have to go to all this mess to get it back.
Exactly. There's a lot of ins and outs. And you know, like I said, for landlord-tenant stuff, a lot of it's very procedural. And you just try to look through the law and find something that is going to work to your benefit. So I know when you're trying to break a lease too, that's always good to look at, see what's on the books. There was I had a friend who was renting a place in Texas, and they wanted to break their lease because they were going to be moving. And they called me up and asked me, you know, if I knew anything about Texas law and how to break a lease. And I said, I have no idea, but I'll take a look at it. So I went through the Texas landlord-tenant statutes and read through them. And I found this kind of strange law that said that doorknobs had to be like a certain height. Like that was like one of their codified type things. Like
the hats in the theater.
Yeah, huh? Exactly. So I told my friend, I was like, go get a tape measure. Go measure your door. See what height it is. So, you know, it was like, you try to be creative and come up with anything you can to see if there's any reason that you can break the lease. And, you know, if that doorknob's the wrong height, then you send a demand saying, hey, you need to fix the doorknob. They don't want to rehang a door. So it's like, instead of doing that, why don't you just let me break this lease? We'll call it even. So, you know, you can come up with different things. You try to be creative. I know it sounds funny, but, you know, as a lawyer, you can be kind of creative and try to find things.
I'm glad to know that that's a creative outlet for you. Go around measuring doorknobs. Hey, buddy, I got a low doorknob in here. I'm leaving. That's it. We're out of this place.
Your Honor, this place is obviously not up to code. The doorknob is at 36 inches. We all know it needs to be 37 and a half inches. Can I get an amen?
How could we let a person live in such squalor as having a 37 and a half inch doorknob?
Some other things that you might notice if you want to break a lease, if you have a lot of insects in your apartment, if there's like some sort of ant infestation, mm-hmm. and you repeatedly tell the landlord that, and again, these things all need to be in writing. So insects are usually a good way to try to get out of a lease. If there's anything that's faulty or broken, just keep complaining to the landlord about it. Document it. Then you might be able to break the lease on those grounds.
I don't think you should recommend people doing that.
Well, no, I mean, they have to be legitimate.
Why am I the reasonable one?
They have to be legitimate.
That's not the way this is supposed to work.
No, they have to be legitimate beefs, but, you know, just got to make sure you document it.
What it all comes down to is these agreements protect people against the other person being a jerk. I mean, if the landlord's a jerk and is trying to get something out of you for his benefit, then hopefully it's going to protect you. And if you're a jerk tenant, then hopefully the law is going to protect that landlord from you being there. So everybody just needs to get along. Just do your civic duty. pay your bill, fix that toilet, don't leave them with a broken oven window thing, and everybody will get along just fine.
Yeah, that's solid advice. And there's no need to hire Rob Lowe, be it
the grinder.
A real Rob Lowe or a faux.
Faux Rob Lowe.
A faux Lowe.
Faux Lowe. Faux Rob Lowe. Faux Rob Lowe.
Well, that's going to do it for the substantive part of our podcast.
Substantive part? What does that mean? We're going into the non-substantive part? What was that word again?
Substantive.
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 He got to pick a different word. I can't say that word.
I can barely say it.
Prestidigitous.
Prestidigitous?
Prognosticate.
There you go.
There's one.
I don't know what that means.
I think it means to like tell the future or something like that.
That being said, it's time for
Legal Briefs. Briefs.
So this is the part of the show where we review some of the terms that we have discussed. And I asked Tommy if he remembers what they are. The first term, force majeure.
Force majeure. Yes, that's when something is can be forced to happen, such as when a tornado takes away the house you're leasing. And therefore, you can't be forced to continue paying for it. And the landlord can't be forced to continue providing you with shelter.
How do you force a tornado? Are you able to control the weather and summon it?
No, you don't force a tornado. A tornado forced you out of your house.
Oh, okay.
When it blew it across the lake there.
Like lakefront property, huh?
It's lake in the lake property.
In the lake. So that's kind of right. Yeah, force majeure is some sort of unforeseen circumstances that basically make the contract itself essentially null and void because you can't perform on it. The next term is self-help eviction.
Self-help eviction is when, like, your tenant is out of his apartment and you run down there and change all the locks on the doors and lock him out of it so he can't get in.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You forgot the button.
I took notes this week. I had 2 weeks in a row where I was striking out. I took notes. I'm ready.
You did forget the butt whooping part.
Well, that's a totally separate one. You can lock them out without whooping their butt, but if you want to make it good, then you whoop their butt after you lock them out.
Oh, yeah. Which is sometimes needed, but legally not allowed.
Legally not allowed. We do not advise administering butt whoopings. Well, besides, we've already had the disclaimer at the beginning.
Yeah, we can say whatever we want at this point.
That's right. We can go wild.
Condition precedent.
What?
Condition precedent.
You just slipped that one in there.
No, I said it.
I was listening, too. I took notes. Condition precedent. Well, I know what a precedent is when you set a precedent. So if the conditions have to be a certain way, then that sets the precedent.
I don't think that's right. I had to think about that for a second. A condition precedent is something you have to do before you have basically jurisdiction to file your action in court. So the example I gave was that 3-day notice saying to pay rent. So that would be a condition precedent to filing an eviction notice.
I see. I thought that was just legal mumbo jumbo.
Nope. Not legal mumbo jumbo. Actual thing.
Actual mumbo jumbo.
Writ of possession.
Now, I know you just threw that one in there. You did not have writ of possession. I know that would have stuck out. And that's something in writing that says you possess it.
It is. And I actually did not touch on that. So that's why I wanted to bring it up.
I got the bonus question. That made up for the other one, the precedent thing.
A writ of possession is what happens basically after the judge rules in favor for an eviction, like saying that they're going to evict you out of your house or your apartment. At that point, the judge would generally issue what's called a writ of possession. And you would give that to the sheriff. And then the sheriff would go and serve that and actually make you get out of your apartment or house.
And he comes up and he says, "You've been served."
Yep. And he drops the mic.
He drops the mic. That's what I did. And it didn't work.
No, not at all.
I don't understand that. Everybody else drops the mic. And that's a good thing. I dropped the mic and I dropped the ball.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Court Appointed. I hope you've enjoyed this one and enjoyed learning about landlord tenant stuff.
Nobody ever enjoys that. That's like seeing sausage made.
I think you stole that from me.
What do you think I got? I'm here to learn. I took notes.
Sausage making notes?
I actually saw Snoop Dogg watching how hot dogs were made, and he swore to never eat a hot dog again after he saw that.
Where did you see that?
It's on Kimmel. He's got once a week on there. He's got Snoop Dogg on there trying to guess what it is that's being made. It's like, how's it mazzizzled? Or something like that.
That sounds
and
awesome.
And it's showing it. And they were showing how they're making hot dogs. And, woo, that was bad. Of course, Snoop Dogg, he's got some colorful terms for what's going on. So
for shizzle.
Every other one's a bleep, though.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.